It's 8:16. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Joining me now on the phone from the Summit County Planning Office, I have planners Amir Koss and Ray Milner. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, let's see. The colony subdivisions, it looks like there's a one-lot subdivision and a 1-8-lot subdivision. It doesn't look like a big deal, but Amir, any issues to those?
No, it's actually a 1-7-lot subdivision, 1-8-lot, so 15 total, and then two ancillary parcels. So the location of the proposed subdivisions is in a gully. It won't be visible from anywhere. Fairly, not entirely flat, but no steep slope issues, with the exception of one lot that's going to be visible from 224 and Bittner Road. But that lot will not be redlining, so staff is forwarding a positive recommendation for both flats.
Okay, you're having a hard time hearing you. You're cutting out quite a bit with some background noise there. I don't know if this is yours or not, but a major interesting item will be the Pace Meadows Ranch rezone. It looks like it was added to the schedule. Can either of you talk about that? Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
So what we have on the Pace Meadow is it's the property located behind Home Depot, to the east and south of Home Depot. It's about 450 acres. And the applicant has come in and requested a review of a rezone from RR to a new zone that they are proposing. And the new zone would be a mixed-use zone. They're asking for, I believe it's about 400,000 square feet of mixed-use development that would be located on 46 acres approximately. So it's a pretty big deal. They're asking for a new zone that we don't have in our code, and they're asking for a conditional use to build what they want back there. Of the remaining approximately 400 acres, they would propose to put that into a conservation easement.
So, I mean, when you say mixed use, we're talking residential and commercial? I mean,
yeah, it would be. I mean, we haven't seen exactly what it would look like, but you know, the standard would be residential on the second and third floors, and then commercial on the first floor. Maybe some single family residential mixed with standalone resident commercial, but you know, they wouldn't be separated like traditionally we see, you know, in our developments around the basin.
Hmm. In a letter that the representatives, Rory Murphy and Brooke Hans, they mention a grocery store, even a cemetery on the open space?
Yeah, they talk about that, and they're asking for a review by the Planning Commission. We'll have to see what they say. It's in the mix, at least in their letter. They've talked about it.
Certainly one of the controversial aspects of the second phase of the general plan is that Section 2.3, which basically doesn't allow development like this, you know, mm-hmm. until all the existing density is built upon. So the fact that it's coming in before that's adopted, they're okay, huh?
Well, they wouldn't. Yeah, I guess. You know, I mean, the general plan is a guideline, and so it would be applied as one of the criteria. But it's not, you know, just a yes, no type document. And so it just provides the Planning Commission and the County Council with guidance as far as with, you know, when they make their decisions.
Yeah. Any idea how much of the area would have to be cleaned up as part of that Silver Creek Tailings Corridor?
We haven't researched it up. I think it would be a significant amount. I mean, they had it cleaned up, but then there was some issues that they're going to have to go back and look at. And so I haven't seen the numbers on exactly how much that is, you know, still needs to be reclaimed.
Okay. Also, a discussion regarding the Frostwood F6 final site plan application. This is proposed for some 25 units and 50,000 square feet of development off of Cooper Lane. Can you give us an idea where that is?
Yeah, that one would be, it's on Cooper Lane, which is just down from the Wyndham and the big fancy hotel there, between kind of as you go towards Sun Peak. And the applicant there is proposing 50,000 square feet of development. It's on one of the parcels that in the canyons with 50,000 square feet of development allowed as part of the spa. The main issues that we have there is making sure that the property is graded to the least extent possible so they can get the property on it. It's pretty steep, and they're proposing to do some significant grading, and so we want to minimize that as much as possible.
Yeah, I think this was the parcel that had some Sun Peak residents pleading that it was promised to be open space. I guess ultimately they weren't successful here, huh?
Well, yeah, there was some. There's been some. Originally, the parcel was a TDR spot, and it was held by the county as a TDR spot. It's always had the 50,000 square feet, but it also had a transfer of development rights designation on it. And so that transfer of development rights was taken off and placed on, I believe, one of the other parcels down in the lower village. And so I think there was some confusion as to when they took that TDR off, that meant it was open space, but it's actually always had the 50,000 square feet on it.
All right. And then also a discussion regarding a proposed amendment to the Canyon Spa land use charge. As well as an amendment to the West Willow Draw master plan development and a final site plan. We're talking about the ski maintenance building again. Maybe you could just give us a little bit of history here. It's still there, and they wanted to move it, and former county manager Bob Jasper turned it down.
Yeah, so what happened, I believe it was last year, the Canyons, the RVMA, came in, and they applied for a conditional use to put the maintenance building on a parcel which is located just east of the Grand Summit Lodge. And one of the requirements of the spa is that they find a new location for their maintenance building, which is down in the Frostwood area. And they came in, they applied for a conditional use to move that building, but there were a bunch of site constraints and issues with it, and so Bob Jasper ultimately ended up denying the application. So now they've come back, and they've found a new location in the West Willow Draw area, and they're proposing to put it up there. Assuming that the Planning Commission finds that it's an appropriate spot, they'll be able to move it there and then take out the existing maintenance building, which would then make way for one of the golf course holes.
Okay, so the amenities of the maintenance building, I mean, is it just a place to store and work on snow groomers and such?
Yeah, it would be a maintenance building with parking for employee parking and then storage of snow cats and snowmobiles and mechanic area, you know, just kind of your standard stuff.
All right. The staff report says that site has nearly 181,000 square feet of lodging density. So where does that go? Mm-hmm.
Well, the way that they're proposing to do it now is to allow that, eventually to allow that density to be transferred to another site. But what they want to do is leave it on site right now until they find a suitable location.
Okay. So do we need to know what that final location is before the Planning Commission can take action on that?
It would probably be good. We'll have to see what the Planning Commission says. They're requesting that it be left open, and so we'll have to see if the Planning Commission, you know, is okay with that or if they want to, you know, have more work done to figure out where that new location will be.
Okay, that'll do it. It could be a pretty lengthy meeting, though, huh?
Yeah, we could be there a while.
Yeah.
It could be fun.
Okay, anything else going on?
I think that's what we got for today.
Okay, thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Leslie.
Staff Planner Ray Milner. It's 8:29, and joining me in the studio now, I have Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So graduation weekend this past weekend here in Summit County, the deputy reports haven't been released, so any shenanigans going on, anything notable?
Actually, it was a very very quiet weekend, you know, and congratulations to all the recent graduates. I remember when I graduated high school, it was a very big day, and, you know, you want to go out and celebrate, but there was really nothing that occurred over the weekend. They graduated, had fun, but did it in the right way, it looks like.
Okay. So you have been hosting Cup with a Cop. These are monthly meetings with the public at local coffee shops to come meet you and a couple of your deputies. You've had, what, two of those now?
That's correct. We've had two of them, one at Hugo Coffee and one at Park City Roasters.
Yeah. So what kind of turnout are you getting?
You know, from the first one to the second one, it's getting bigger. It's getting, I think the word's getting out there that we're there present, we're there to just to talk with people. And so the last one we had was really a lot of fun. We had probably about 30 people show up. It was amazing. And that's not all at once. That's for the about hour and a half that we're there. But it was it's a lot of fun getting just to talk with people. There's some issues they want to talk about. There's some but they just want to stop in and say, I've always wanted to meet you, and I thought this was a good opportunity.
So is that really what you're hearing now, just an opportunity to see who you are and say hello, as opposed to expressing concern?
Concerns, obviously, I think concerns with the leash laws, they are addressing those. They're addressing some other issues that they're bringing my attention, but a lot of it's just the whole purpose of the meet and greet, saying hi, nice to meet you, and just talking, really just a conversation that doesn't have any, there's no agenda. So it's made it really nice to just get to know people in the community.
Yeah. Do deputies actually do leash law control?
That's animal control. Animal control, that falls under theirs. But we have been assisting Brian Bellamy, the animal control, because, you know, they're non-law enforcement. And they tend to, when they go to issue citations, maybe not be taken as serious. But when we have a deputy assisting them, they pay a little bit more attention. But the majority of that falls under animal control.
Yeah. Do your deputies, though, have the authority to issue citations?
Oh, absolutely.
If they're at?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so what is it that, because we're kind of like in the middle of this debate, you know. I mean, it's really the few bad apples, bad dogs in this case, that are causing the problems. And for the most part, you know, we are kind of a dog community.
It's basically an open air kennel here in Park City. Everybody loves their dogs. I you know, my wife just took our dogs to one of the new dog parks up in Summit Park. And, you know, it's an off-leash park area. It was great because there's other dogs that are off leash, and that's where people should be going. With that being said, yesterday I also was driving, riding my bike from my house up to Park City, and I had two dogs off leash run in front of me, and run in front of some other bikers, and the bikers going the opposite direction were yelling at the dog owners, put your dog on a leash. So, you know, there are those that are responsible and those that are taking it seriously, and those that still just believe that, I guess it's their right to have their dog off leash, but it does interfere with other people's travels on bikes and hiking and such.
And that can be dangerous.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anything based on what you've heard at these couple of meetings that you thinking about changing or, implementing or?
Nothing as of yet. There's been, I've already started my implementing the changes that I wanted to make. We're rebranding the sheriff's office. We've got the new patch that just arrived, so you'll be seeing a new patch, a new look for the sheriff's deputies. The cars have been got new graphics. So we're making that change to rebrand, and, you know, I'm doing the things internally within the office, but nothing more than I'm already have implemented.
Okay. So when and where is the next Cup of Joe?
The next cup of coffee is going to be in Colville this Thursday, the 11th, at between 9 and 10, and it's going to be at Moore's gas station. We really had a hard time finding like a really coffee shop in the Colville area, but a lot of people gather at the Moore's Chevron gas station. They get together, the locals, so we're going to host it there, and we're going to probably bring up a up tent and then just be outside as people come in and get their coffee.
All right. So it's you and what, two or three deputies?
A few deputies that, you know, if there's a specific question with civil or corrections, that I have somebody that might have a little bit more knowledge in those areas that they could answer those questions. I would say the majority of the time it's just coming in and saying hi.
All right. The sheriff's office also participated in the Bike to School Day. Your officers, what, helping out at the school bike rodeos?
Well, we participated in that Bike to School, but we had our bike deputies holding intersections and helping out with along those lines for the children. What we are doing, the sheriff's office, what I'm doing is on the 23rd, I'm having a bike rodeo at the sheriff's office. The 23rd, it's a Tuesday from 4 to 6, And we're inviting people to come out. We're going to have our motors there. We're going to have our bike patrol there. They'll be doing demonstrations. I believe the health department's going to be there with free helmets. And we're going to be putting them through a little bit of a course. We're getting into the summer months. Kids are out of school, and they're riding their bikes more. So we want to, you know, teach them rules of the road and help them to be as safe as possible. And, you know, we'll be cooking hot dogs. So we'd like to have a big turnout. Tuesday the 23rd between 4 and 6 at the sheriff's office. Come out. I'll be making hot dogs for the kids. Should be a lot of fun.
All right. So right there in front of the parking lot there, the Justice Center?
Correct. We're going to move some vehicles aside, put up some cones, and, you know, again, like I said, to help kids as they move into the summer months to ensure that they're safety, they're wearing their helmets, that the helmets are being worn properly, and that they're looking out when they're riding their bikes in their driveway or on the road.
Okay. Some good news recently. One of your deputies saving a youngster, 1-year-old, I think.
That was an amazing story. When I heard about it, and when I started looking into it further, what he actually did and how that actually came about was absolutely amazing. I've spoken with the family members, and she's doing very well. But his calmness, his demeanor, his professionalism, and his training and experience kicked in. He was basically handed a lifeless child, and he took it one step at a time. Was very calm in his demeanor, and he was able to start rescue breathing and CPR, and noticed that the airway was occluded. Asked if they had a bulb syringe. They didn't. So the father, from my understanding, grabbed a pen or a straw or something, and he was able to help suction out anything that was any vomitus that was in the mouth, and then continue with the CPR and rescue breathing until the child started breathing on her own. I mean, it was an amazing, amazing story that, you know. Then when the medics arrived and they continued helping, setting up life flight and getting her down the hospital. So I take my hat off to Sergeant Wild. He really went above and beyond. And, you know, people are in an emergency situation. They expect law enforcement. They expect the firefighters. They expect all public safety to know their job and know it well. And I think that was demonstrated here very professionally.
Yeah. So most of us would have called dispatch and had dispatch walk us through that. He was just able to do it on his own then, huh?
We're provided with that training, but the family had left. They were on their way to the hospital. They were on their way to seek medical treatment. They had called 911 en route. Our dispatch automated system was able to determine that we had a deputy in very close proximity, asked them, you know, please pull over. I know that sounds counterintuitive. You want to get someplace, but please pull over and wait. A deputy will be there within seconds. And sure enough, the deputy was there. Father comes out of the vehicle with the child, and just hands this child to this deputy, and wants her to be fixed. So it worked out.
I mean, that was life and death, and that's there are certainly some potential for brain damage given the lack of oxygen. Wow, pretty impressive. Also, just wanted to ask you, because we're seeing some of the support build now here, even the governor kind of coming out with support for at least a study for introducing medical marijuana here in Utah. What are your thoughts about allowing something like that?
You know, I think a study is definitely an appropriate measure to take. We don't know what we don't know. And, you know, it's been always this taboo narcotic that, you know, that you've got the two sides, and it's got medicinal purposes, that it has legitimate purpose. And if it does, I think it should be explored. But because the government has put it in a classification that doesn't even allow it to be studied, I think that's potentially irresponsible on the government. Just saying, I mean, look at prohibition. They said alcohol, and then they reversed it. Same thing with marijuana. I think a study is an appropriate measure taken. If the studies show that no, it does not help, then we move forward. But if it does show that it helps with seizures, it helps with cancer treatment, why not go down that road? You know, I think it's time to be a little more open-minded. As it sits now, it is a legal narcotic. And until the governor changes it to something that is a controlled, and that we can use it for medicinal purposes, we'll readdress that then. But for the time being, we'll still treat it as the as it is on the books. But I think a study is definitely an appropriate measure to take.
All right. And finally, I just wanted to ask you, given that lots, you know, this is kind of event season with summer kicking off, that means a lot of probably overtime for your deputies. At the same time, they probably want to take some time off for themselves. So are you able to balance the requests and meet the need?
It's a juggling act, Leslie, for sure. We have, you know, everybody wants to be with their families the 4th of July, 24th of July, go on vacation to Disneyland. And, you know, having all the events that we come in with Ragnar, the 3rd of July celebration at the Canyons, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. It is a real juggling act, and we don't want to burn our deputies out either, because we want them to go be with their families, but we need them to protect the citizens of Summit County. So we will bring in reserves, we'll bring in part-timers, and we'll do everything we can to we will ensure the safety of the citizens of Summit County first and foremost, but we also will make room for our deputies to go on vacation. It's a balancing act, but we've been doing it for the past few years. We'll continue to do it.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
As we're coming into the fire season, we've had a lot of rain. It's been nice and plush green out there. It's beautiful. But as it starts to warm up, ask people, this is a little plug for, I guess, Chief Paul Hewitt, be real careful in your fireworks use. This is a beautiful community. We do not want to burn it down.
All right. So. Sheriff, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez. Well, in the final Park City Film Series screening at Prospector Theater, the film The Long Night will be shown Thursday night. On the phone with me, I have the film's director, Tim Matsui, and then the director, film series director, Katie Wang. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
You there, Tim? Okay, great. So, Katie, give us, if you would, Katie, give us the details of Thursday night and maybe why you're showing this film.
Sure. So we'll be back at the Prospector Theater. It's our last screening, as you said, on Sidewinder Drive. And this film came to our attention a few months ago, actually, and I had a chance to meet with Tim in person to talk about the film. And it's about sex trafficking of young girls. And, you know, while the setting of the film is more of an urban setting, it's set in Seattle, it's an issue that I think, like bullying, affects all of us in ways that we don't often expect. You know, some of the girls that are profiled in the film are seemingly not at risk. They have good families. They just have made bad decisions. And I think that that's something that, as a parent, you know, is terrifying, but also something that you really want to be paying attention to. So it's an important topic. Certainly at Sundance this year, we saw a lot of films about sex trafficking. And it's a topic that's gaining prominence internationally. And we thought that for our community, we wanted to kind of shed light on that and then also add, as we like to do with these special screenings, have that panel that talks more deeply about what's going on in our community. So Tim will be here, as you mentioned. We'll also have representatives from the Utah Attorney General's office, Summit County Attorney General's office. The Children's Justice Center will be there, and that's our partner on the film. We've been talking a lot with Christina Sally because she sees this. I mean, she sees children that are being abused in various ways, but sex trafficking does happen here in Summit County, unfortunately, and it's something that we should be aware of as a community and be paying attention to help them. And the film really, I think, is comprehensive, not just about, you know, the problem, but also about some solutions that are being kind of brought together.
Yeah. So Thursday night, 7
so Thursday p.m. night, 7 o'clock. It's a free screening. The film will be followed by a panel discussion with Tim and these representatives from various law enforcement and also Valley Behavioral Health.
Okay. So Tim, how did you even find out what was going on to make this film?
Well, I've been doing work on trauma and victimization for 15 years, starting with sexual violence. Around 2006-07, I spent some time in Southeast Asia looking at human trafficking for labor and for sex. And then when I came back in 2009 to Seattle, I found that the city was addressing minor sex trafficking here and had some recommendations that were mirroring what I'd seen overseas. So I felt that I could start researching here and reconnecting with that sexual violence community. And over the next 4 years, the research and the grant writing finally led to one from the Alexia Foundation. And I was able to spend some time with the SeaTac Police Department, with a survivor, and with somebody who's still caught in the life.
Yeah. So tell us, you know, Katie kind of introduced the film. So tell us a little bit about the film. What happens? Or about who's involved here?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's Natalie and her family, and Natalie is kind of a survivor story. She was She ran away from home at 15, and within 72 hours was turning tricks. She ended up meeting a bottom girl who introduced her to a pimp, and that pimp turned her out. And what followed after that is, you know, she goes home, and she faces a community that rejects her. Her family doesn't quite understand how to handle this. She doesn't understand either, and so she goes back out. And she really shares very, very intimately with us what occurred during that time for her, both emotionally and physically. And then there's the law enforcement here, and there's been a really progressive look at working with these young victims and trying to divert them from incarceration, trying to find other ways to handle this instead of just throwing them in jail where they have no services. And so these police actually created a drop-in center, a nonprofit drop-in center that allows them to divert some of these children from incarceration. And then through them, I actually met Lisa, who is still in the life. She was turned out at 13, has developed a heroin addiction in the meanwhile. And I met her at 19, and that actually was the start of a her greatest efforts to try and get out of the life. Though it's an ongoing struggle and really kind of underscores the need for harm reduction type programs for both low-level drug offenders and those caught in sex work.
Yeah. You know, there was a film at this year's Sundance Film Festival, Hot Girls or something, that kind of talked about...
Hot Girls Wanted?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so, but I guess the big difference here is that these are girls, 18 and older, who really willingly got into the porn business. I think for one thing, maybe thinking that they were going to become famous, or for many of them, just a way to get out of Dodge. The difference here is what these kids are just kind of being turned out on the street and don't have advocates.
They don't have advocates. Actually, there are four in King County now who are 24/7 as advocates for these specific individuals. But I think a lot of times people, they go out looking for something, and it puts them in a vulnerable situation, and there are people out there willing to exploit them, and there are people willing, who are the demands, who are willing to work with the exploit. And that's essentially what happened for both Lisa and Natalie, is that they became vulnerable through their own choice or through family situations, and they were exploited. Which, you know, I mean, if you look at the young women who are adults in Hot Girls Wanted, they could become exploited if, you know, there's something in their story that allows them to become more vulnerable. And I think that, you know, what you're seeing in Hot Girls Wanted is more about that consensual, willing choice. You know, but definitely there is risk in all of this, largely because there is demand for people who, you know, to provide services.
Wow. And so, I mean, do we have things in place, though, that can give girls kind of trapped up in this situation help? Or do they need to come find it?
I was actually talking I met with the deputy police chief in Salt Lake City when I was there, and when I met Katie, and there are services in the area, but there's not that much. I think there's a family service center that has the ability to address this specific, group. But one of the problems with this is that, you know, with survivors of sex trafficking, you're looking at not just, rape or sexual violence. You're looking at domestic violence. You're often looking at what made them vulnerable in the first place, which could be lack of education or mental health or drug use, poor family situations. And so I think that to be able to really truly address this, and this is something that King County and Seattle and actually the state of Washington as a whole is really trying to approach progressively, is to look at what is called full wrap care and really looking at all those elements that are the root causes to creating that vulnerability, and address that, as well as provide specific services that meet those different needs. And that could be long-term housing. It could be outpatient care for drug use. It could be extensive counseling. But oftentimes, especially if the child has been romanced by a pimp, there's kind of a Stockholm syndrome where they identify with that situation and have love for that pimp, which is what happened for Natalie. And they don't identify as a victim. And so helping them see that they might have been exploited is one of those really tricky and difficult things to do in providing care. But there is stuff out there, and it is becoming something that communities are increasingly aware of. And that's really kind of what I hope the film does, is provide a talking point for communities that helps build that awareness and then the support for the services that are necessary to help these children.
Yeah, I was going to say, too bad we can't get the help that would be needed, really, for the person that would even get involved with a 13-year-old, but I guess that's a whole other film there.
Yeah, well, that's the one actually I'm trying to work on now, so we'll see.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to tell us about the film?
I think that what I'm hearing from audiences is that it's powerful and intimate, that people who are both in the life, who are service providers, who are law enforcement, they've all said that this is the real deal and that it's powerful in that way. And I hope that audiences come out and can experience that. And also, in particular, on Thursday, listen to and participate in the panel discussion, because, you know, these are the community's experts who are going to be there. And I'd love for the local audience to have that opportunity to engage.
Okay. Hey, Tim, thanks for your time. Katie, anything you wanted to add?
Oh, thank you.
No, just as Tim was saying, you know, I think it's a great opportunity to find out more about this important topic, you know, certainly very serious, but also what's going on in our community, how it affects all of us, and how we can proactively help protect our children, you know, on the front end. And then, you know, if they unfortunately get into this situation, how can we get them back out, you know, help them help themselves? And I think that's a really powerful component of this film, that it has solutions in it, not just here's the problem, but it's also what can we do about it.
Okay.
So Thursday night, it's a free screening, 7 o'clock, followed by the panel discussion at the Prospector Theater, parkcityfilmseries.org. If you want to check out the trailer and more information on that.
Okay. Katie Wang and Tim Mitsui, thanks.
Thank you.
It's 8:53. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. In the studio with me now from the Park City Chamber Bureau, Craig McCarthy. Hi, Craig.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Well, thank you. So another fun party coming up Thursday. Tell us about it.
Indeed. And it's time to celebrate summer. Looking outside the studio windows right now, the sky is blue and everything is great. And this is our summer kickoff mixer, and this is also Thursday evening. This is right before the film series event, so this is from 4 to 7. And what we do at the Chamber Bureau is we bring together 35 summer activity and entertainment providers and basically bring them all into one place so locals can find out everything there is to do about things to do for the summer, whether they have family coming to town, if they work in the hospitality industry. You know, this enables them to come to one place, be able to get all the information they need to answer questions people might have.
So tell me about some of the 35 you've got coming, you know, like the balloon companies, the resorts, the things like that.
Well, of course, at the top of the list is KPCW, and no doubt the snow cone machine will be there. We have the Egyptian Theater. The three ski resorts will be there talking about all they have offering this summer. Utah Olympic Park, Deer Valley Music Festival, the Park City Institute, Park City Balloon Adventure Company, to name that as well. Park City on the Fly Fishing, Pedego Park City, who rents electric bikes down there in the Prospector area, Utah Wine Tours. These people actually come up and give wine tours here. We have Red Pine Adventures, Rocky Mountain Outfitters that offer horseback riding and outdoor adventures of those type. The Mondays, which is a local rock and roll band. They're going to be there talking about what they do. Brian McInerney with the Weather Service is part of that band, and they basically a cover band for rock and roll. So a real variety of different types of businesses that will be here. It's really, this is our fourth year we've done this. It's a lot of fun. It's open to the entire community. It's not just for Chamber Bureau members. And we have free food. Did I mention we have free food? Yes, free food. People love that. Cash bar as well. Have lots of swag available for people from the 35 exhibitors we'll have there. We also will have a number of prize drawings throughout the evening, so that's always fun. People will essentially drop a name in a hat, and we'll do a prize drawing every 15 minutes, and there's some great prizes. The resorts have lift tickets and mountain bike rentals. The Utah Olympic Park will give away some gold passes, which includes the bobsled ride. So there's some really good stuff that's given away. So it's a lot of fun.
All right, just show up. You don't need RSVP. Just come on out to the Legacy Lodge.
Second floor, Legacy Lodge, 4 to 7 o'clock p.m., Park City Mountain Resort. And we're going to be having a good time that evening.
Okay. Anything else?
That should do it. Thanks so much. Okay. Just encourage everybody to come, families, friends, furry critters I'm not so sure about, but everybody else is welcome to join us that evening.
Okay, Craig, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Craig McCarthy with Park City Chamber Bureau.